You are listening to Adaptivate, a podcast that inspires industry leaders to leverage technology and new ideas to learn how to adapt, grow their businesses, and create better organizations. My name is Jeremy Miller, and I'm a marketer that currently works at GE Appliances, and I consider myself a student of business and innovation. I am talking with technologists, engineers, and business leaders about how their experiences have shaped their mindsets. In today's episode, we will be speaking with Matthew Hammond, an experienced digital marketing leader who currently leads the demand generation team for Labelbox, an AI platform that allows data scientists to better manage their training data. Prior to Labelbox, Matthew led global paid media marketing at Appian, a publicly traded low-code platform company, and previously managed global digital marketing operations at Sentient Technologies, now called Evolve.ai. I'm here with Matthew Hammond, who is a digital marketing leader, and I'm really excited to have him on here today. We worked together before. Such a bright person, such a great background. But Matt, I thought it'd be awesome if you could share with everybody your background in digital marketing, how you kind of came to be a marketer.
Yeah, sure. Jeremy, good to be with you today, and thanks for having me on the podcast. So I got into digital marketing in an unconventional manner and at a pretty young age, actually. I was in high school at the time, and I was a little bit bored with class. So after working a few part-time retail jobs, I decided that I wanted to find a way to sort of do something on my own and build a small business. So for some context, back in Australia, in Melbourne, where I'm from, coffee is a really big deal. And there are a ton of really good gourmet coffee roasteries. And I decided that I really wanted to go and start an online e-commerce business, specifically focused on dropshipping. So I set up an e-commerce website where I sold coffee supplies and coffee equipment. And in doing that, I essentially had to learn all of the steps and hoops and things to go through marketing the website. If I didn't do that, I wouldn't have made any sales. So I dabbled with key marketing channels at the time, like paid search, AdWords, now Google Ads. I was very focused on ranking the site for key terms and also became very interested in a lot of the operational and mechanical aspects of digital marketing as well, as I was fairly sort of technically inclined. And then after running that and sort of building that sort of small business out, which was pretty rewarding given I was like 16 at the time. A lot of family friends and their friends were sort of interested in how I was doing this and wanted to sort of do the same for their businesses. So I really got into helping them with building their websites and running some small online marketing campaigns and helping them with lead generation and so forth. And that was my foray. That was all sort of at about 17 years old. So yeah, that's how I got into it. And ever since then, I've dabbled in other areas academically, but I've stayed true to my digital marketing roots.
You know, you've probably seen a lot throughout your career. But first, I think it'd be helpful for our listeners if maybe you define digital marketing in your own terms, because it's kind of a broad concept, right?
Yeah, indeed. So I actually think nowadays, and I think the coronavirus pandemic has certainly accelerated this, but I think nowadays, pretty much all marketing is digital, perhaps except if you were to run a print ad in the newspaper, but even that process in and of itself is digitally managed now. So generally speaking, through a stricter lens, I'd see digital marketing as really relating to marketing served through the internet. But I mean, now that can be in a lot of places. It can be on digital billboards. You can literally go and buy digital out-of-home placements through the internet now and serve them in a matter of hours. You can get advertising on your fridge if it has an internet browser. You can obviously get advertising through your phone. You can be exposed to advertising on TVs through like over-the-top technologies and other things and even other devices like smartwatches and things. So digital marketing, in my view, sort of transverses all of these different devices and mediums. But the one thing which is central to it all is the interconnectedness through the internet.
Do you still think there's a place for the non-digital, like, you know, for example, direct mail? Do you think that's really going to die, or do you think there actually might be a mix there that people can leverage?
I absolutely think there is a place for marketing that isn't digital. In some respects, the more analog the marketing, the better. And the reason I believe that is because the harder it is to execute on marketing, or the less measurable marketing is, the less people tend to do it. And that is really where you can find sort of golden areas of opportunities. Back when I was running an agency in Australia, one of the things that we used to do was send out what we referred to as lumpy mail. So we'd literally send out objects in the mail. People would get a package from us. They'd never heard of us, except from when they saw the letter in the package. And it was a great way to sort of get people's attention. Of course, you know, very few, if any, other agencies were really doing it at that time. So I certainly believe there are a role for more analog mechanisms, and not all marketing has to be numerically measured by pure dollars in and dollars out. I think you can afford, and you should definitely invest in some channels which are not as measurable. So for sure.
My next question is kind of on how has this industry evolved? The theme of this podcast is on things like transformation and adaptation. And what have you seen over your career in terms of how this industry has evolved?
Yeah, I think in a lot of respects, AI and digital marketing are sort of a natural fit for one another. It's a natural evolution of algorithms that have really powered digital marketing from the beginning. If you think about the very sort of early iteration of Google, for example, with the PageRank algorithm, it wasn't technically a form of AI, but it really was sort of the predecessor of commercialized AI. Now, Google uses what they refer to as the RankBrain algorithm, and it does use contemporary AI. But, you know, the reason you need these algorithms and the reason why AI is so powerful in this context is because there's so much data in digital marketing. If you think about just a digital marketing report from, say, your Google Ads console or your Facebook marketing console, you're dealing with hundreds and or thousands of rows of different values, which you can slice and dice in many different ways. That, you know, the advantage that AI provides is that it can often handle large amounts of data, draw accurate or preemptively accurate inferences, and it can process them in a relatively short amount of time. And when you think about like a Google search query, for instance, Google returns accurate, relevant results in a fraction of a second. And for this to continue to happen at scale, especially with the sort of the ever-growing size and complexity of the open web, you need to have continual developments in technology for this to occur. And I think the other thing is that AI has increasingly been developed for more specific applications over time, particularly around the optimization of marketing and specifically paid advertising. Facebook, for example, LinkedIn, they all use forms of AI-based optimization in their advertising delivery. Even standard analytics tools today, like Google Analytics, have aspects of AI for inferential or predictive analytics. There are sort of the increased prevalence of chatbots across company websites now, even though not all chatbots are, you know, strictly speaking AI, they are a sort of a branch of AI. And, you know, these chatbots do improve customer experience by delivering relevant information faster. So I think AI and digital marketing really sort of have worked well together. And AI is really focused on automating away the parts of the marketing process that marketers really don't like to do, essentially.
That's really good insight. And I think a lot of us have, you know, probably seen some documentaries on Netflix and others talking about how all these companies are using data. And there's obviously the spookiness of all of this. But my question actually is relative to overfitness. Is there a notion of overfitness occurring, right? The algorithms are designed to feed you content that is based on your historical interests and what people know about you. But the human experience obviously is about broadening and exploring and being curious. And so in some ways, do you think that these algorithms are overfitting?
Yeah, it's absolutely an issue. And it's particularly an issue in B2B marketing, where I mostly work now. So if you imagine sort of what AI does, it's kind of very good at trying to drive toward a repeated action. So in the case of advertising optimization, Facebook or LinkedIn or Google uses their algorithm to try and get often more conversions, which could be a form fill or an e-commerce purchase. Naturally, what happens when you do that is the AI looks at all these data points and it tries to find similarities. And what that means is that you end up getting more users who are similar, but you do so at the expense of finding users that perhaps have other traits or other segments that are perhaps not as well explored. And in a B2B context, this can actually lead to a situation where you become very much over-optimized on, say, generating leads, but not so well optimized on generating actual customers, because the algorithm that's optimizing doesn't have a lot more context on the customers that move through the funnel. Now, there are solutions technically around that now that try and help you get that step further. But I think a lot of companies from an analytical perspective are not quite there yet. And you know, as a result, they start to see diminishing returns with their marketing investment because they're just not getting the most out of these algorithms. The algorithms are really not configured to deliver what they actually want. They're delivering what they can optimize to with the data they have.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if there is kind of a change. I kind of feel like it's almost like one of these potential weak spots in the armor that somebody could maybe try to come out with some new solution that could deliver a better experience. But I mean, it sounds like people are looking at it. I did want to talk about the one thing that I loved about working with you was that first, you're just an incredibly curious person and you're always looking at different ways to solve problems, different ways to approach problems, trying new things that we didn't know were proven yet. My question is, you know, how is it that people understand the best tactics to use for things like search engine optimization, given that Google doesn't tell you the things that you might need to know to do that better than somebody else?
I think that, you know, in the SEO world, I see it, there's really two ways to do SEO. You can kind of do SEO and like do all of the checklists and make your site optimized, or you can do SEO in a very sort of deeply technical sense, and you're very fascinated about backlinks and you're trying to get new backlinks and you're looking at perhaps exploiting new algorithmic developments and things like that. And sort of the former is a much safer bet. The latter tends to be much more impactful, but carries more risk. You know, most companies really sort of sit in the former position, and that's fine. And they'll still get, you know, potentially lots of organic traffic as their brand grows. But I think the real answer to this question, you know, it sort of goes beyond organic search, but you really need to be continually exposed to the tools and you need to be continually testing these things. The only way you can really develop this knowledge is if you are literally running campaigns and you're seeing numbers change, and you have to dive in and understand, why are these numbers changing? What was the impact of that? Why did it occur? There's no standardized training for sort of organic search or Google. Like, there are plenty of courses you can do. Most of them, frankly, I don't think are that great. A lot of them are outdated, but there are some sort of fundamentals that you need to cover off on first. Beyond that point, you know, it's really a matter of staying up to date, reading, but really diagnosing and troubleshooting developments. And I think that's where you get the most benefit from. It's just not like it used to be with a lot of other things. You can't just sort of do a certification in it and call it a day. It won't work anymore in that sense for a lot of digital marketing technologies.
My next question is actually along those lines, and I think that was a great segue. But let's just say you're one of our customers listening to this, and maybe you're getting started in digital marketing. It's something that you're starting to incorporate into your strategy, or you've been doing it for a long time, but maybe are starting to plateau in terms of results. Are there kind of new tools or different resources or websites you might recommend somebody check out to help them advance their learning or maybe refresh, you know, their thinking on some of their tactics?
If you are in a, you know, in sort of a builder or property management role or something in this space, then there are a couple of things I would consider. But the things that I would consider actually sort of go outside of the traditional sort of digital marketing ecosystem. I mean, the fact is a lot of these companies are competing in very competitive spaces, and the differentiation between a lot of these businesses is often very insignificant. And I think before launching any new digital marketing campaigns, or perhaps if you're thinking about changing things up, you need to sort of think about your service offering. You need to go beyond the old kind of adage of I'm delivering great service at a great price. You need to think about specialization and the types of customers that are ideal for you and those that are not, and what kinds of customers represent the highest value. You need to do a little bit of market research and sort of develop a strong go-to-market hypothesis. If you don't have the time or you're not necessarily interested in doing this, perhaps it's a good idea to bring in a consultant or someone to help you do this. Because the reality is that, and I have seen so many businesses make this mistake, particularly when I worked in an agency environment, is that, you know, you're never going to have success when you go into the market spending potentially tens of thousands of dollars a month on Google Ads, offering discounted services just to get clients. You really need to have a point of difference and deliver something that's compelling, that cuts through the noise, because, you know, it doesn't take any kind of rocket scientist knowledge to realize that if you type in any of these terms into Google today, they are incredibly competitive. And one of the biggest advantages you can have in search and across all paid media is differentiation that allows you to kind of get the click ahead of someone else. If you can get those sort of marketing strategy fundamentals right, and you can continue to sort of optimize against those, then I think you're going to be in a much better place to start running digital marketing campaigns. Once that's in place, you know, you can then sort of start with introducing a marketing automation system, something like a HubSpot or an Infusionsoft, to sort of manage your database and start to get a little bit smarter around communicating with your customers on a regular cadence. You can start to experiment with some paid social advertising and paid search. But you know, you really need to have a great idea of what you're going to say and how you're going to position yourself in the market before you even think about spending a dollar on any advertising, in my view.
When we return, Matthew will share his perspective on where the digital marketing industry is heading and ways you can either learn new skills or sharpen the ones you already have. Who do you think actually does a pretty good job, though, on the digital front in terms of good message, good creative, good execution overall?
There are so many brands that I love their production value. There's a ton of direct-to-consumer brands that have produced amazing ads in the past. A few sort of come to mind, Away Luggage. There is a few other sort of dental brands that have come up on Instagram lately that just have amazing creative. There's a few B2B brands that do a great job, like Drift, for example, as a software vendor, have amazingly engaging and useful and purposeful content and have really sort of thought about their market and, you know, really turned kind of boring B2B marketing on its head in some respects. But, you know, I think this comes down to doing a bit of research in your industry and finding what other people are doing and really trying to do it even better if you can.
I really like that last point. You know, I'm a shameless, I guess you would say, borrower of good ideas. That's, I think, always something that people maybe should consider when thinking about a strategy. Don't be afraid to borrow somebody's idea, synthesize it, make it your own, try to execute it better, as you said. I think it's such a great place to start.
Yeah. I mean, the B2B marketing side of things does this all the time, borrows from B2C and B2C marketers. In some respects, B2B is a few steps behind the D2C curve. But there's no shame in copying good ideas as long as you can insert some kind of originality.
I do want to go back to one point you made about search optimization, and it's a technical question, but I think you'll be able to articulate it in a way that people benefit from it. I think a lot of times when people think about search engine optimization, they think of explicit keywords or phrases. Yeah, you talked about the notion of backlinking as one strategy, but as I understand it, Google is also more intelligent in terms of how you use language, placement of language, you know, the consistency of language across touch points. Maybe from your professional perspective, what are some of the easier technical things that maybe most people don't know about when it comes to search engine optimization?
Yeah, I think a great place to start with search engine optimization is taking a look at your site as if you were not an existing customer and clicking through it. And perhaps you can do this with a friend or family member or colleague and click through it and just imagine you're reading the site for the very first time and sort of, you know, ask yourself, does this answer all the questions that I might have if I was a first-time visitor? Or even if I'm not, even if I'm a repeat visitor, but I'm not yet a customer, does this website address the concerns? You know, what might I be looking for at this point in time? And you'll also find that when you search for queries around your business type in Google, you'll see questions that appear underneath the search box that are sort of suggested based on your query. These questions that have sort of like accordion buttons that you can click and see results in the search results screen are a great indicator of what people are looking for. And you can use that content, or those questions rather, to sort of inform the content on your actual website. Doing that is a great way to sort of ensure that your website is addressing the questions that people have when they're in the research phase of their buying decision. But it also helps improve your relevancy from an organic search perspective. The other thing I would do with your website is make sure you're operating it in a way which is legitimate. I mean, if you go to the best company sites in the world, you know, you think that some of the biggest companies like a Walmart.com, you know, they all have privacy policies. They have contact pages. They have about us pages. Make sure you've got all of the standard things that you need that suggest credibility. Make sure you've got your address listed. Make sure there's a phone number. Everything that goes to sort of show you're an authentic business, because one thing that Google loves is strong trust signals, particularly in the age of fake news and misinformation and disinformation. So make sure you have all of that covered as well. And I guess the final thing to consider as well is, you know, ensure you're producing good quality content. You're not writing for search rankings. You're writing for people. You know, even if you rank a site, if someone clicks on it and it's horrible, they're not going to convert. So make sure that you're actually building out your website for people, not for search engines. Google is very good now about being able to crawl websites that use contemporary JavaScript frameworks. They're very good about, you know, not needing to have specific content on specific pages. They can draw inference from other pages and rank the most relevant page. So overall, you know, build your website for people, not for search engines is my key message here.
Looking forward, it's hard for me to imagine that this industry could handle any more innovation, but it seems to me that digital marketing is still a new thing. I mean, how a couple decades old in some ways in terms of a mainstream marketing tactic. What's next? Like, what do you think is really going to continue to push this industry forward?
It's a good question. I actually, at this stage, don't have a good answer to that. I think the real question at the moment with digital marketing is, you know, where is it actually going to be in the next few years? There are a lot of headwinds in marketing at the moment from a data privacy perspective, which are limiting some of the capabilities of the reporting and analytics and targeting capabilities that marketers have taken for granted over the last couple of years. And I think that's going to result in a shift. I think going forward, marketers are going to have to start to embrace technologies that are more privacy-centric, and that may come at the expense of some efficiencies, but really it is a reflection of what consumers want, and you know, you have to accept that that's the direction things are going in. So I believe that a lot of the technology that we will see in the future is probably going to be more privacy-focused. I think it's going to be more focused around delivering tactical value with AI. I think gone are the days when you could sprinkle in kind of this magical AI and sell it on that basis, at least in more technically forward companies. Nowadays, people want to see the tangible benefit. They don't just believe the hype anymore. So I think that AI is kind of table stakes at this point. And then I think sort of the final thing that people really see in digital marketing is perhaps some kind of decentralization. You know, in a lot of respects, the walled gardens of Facebook and perhaps Twitter and others are not as strong as they once were. And this is going to lead to more disparate kind of communities and disparate areas that people gather online, and marketers are going to need to keep attuned to their audience and make sure that they are still marketing in the right places. And that is a continual process that needs to be reviewed.
Yeah, somebody the other day I was talking to made this comment that they thought that programmatic advertising maybe was dying. And I thought it was an interesting idea. I hadn't given it much thought. But in the world that you just described, this decentralized world, it seems to me that programmatic would be even more powerful because no human can manage all the different networks you need to manage your content on. So what does that world look like?
Yeah, I mean, I think programmatic advertising it's here to stay as a concept. I think just the way you do programmatic advertising is going to change. Right now, programmatic advertising is heavily reliant, or at least has been heavily reliant on third-party data for targeting, for instance, which is becoming increasingly challenging to manage from a compliance perspective. So we'll probably see the advent of third-party data as the primary way of targeting users start to change. And instead, it might be based on placements, or it might be based on, you know, it could be words on the page or other targeting mechanisms, perhaps even those that, you know, that we used to use 10 years ago. I mean, I think that's kind of the first change in programmatic. The other thing I would say about programmatic is that a lot of supply side vendors, particularly media sites and so forth, really want to get more of a cut of the profits from programmatic advertising. So you'll probably see the emergence of more self-managed advertising platforms that are available directly with the supply side vendor. So for example, In Australia, we've seen some of the news organizations actually launch their own advertising management consoles as opposed to going through a DSP to buy advertising. So I imagine this trend will continue. And I think, you know, the core programmatic nature of advertising being, you know, automatically managed and optimized through algorithms will stay, but the way you buy it and the data you have to buy it will probably change.
Matt, you know, any parting thoughts for those who might be listening, whether they're a builder, a retailer, just somebody that's curious about digital marketing?
Yeah, I think having a good working knowledge of digital marketing is useful in business these days. And even if you don't necessarily want to become a full-blown expert in it, I think it's useful to have some knowledge of it. You know, there are a couple of great resources that I can point you to in terms of where you might go to find out more information. There's a site called digitalmarketer.com that has some great resources and some sort of entry-level courses, which are well worth the money. There are courses through Coursera, for example, that you can do. And there are also some great books, Web Copy That Sells by Maria Veloso and The Copywriter's Handbook by Robert Bly. Those kinds of resources are really going to drive you to sort of the foundational understanding that you need to have in digital marketing. And I think one of the biggest things that you can do in digital marketing as we go forward with a lot of these technological developments is really focus on the creative aspects. Make sure that you have great copy. Make sure that you have compelling creative, good offers. Your company and business stands out, because without that, you know, you're just going to blend into the rest of the crowd. And with the sort of emergence of AI algorithms, that's never a good thing. So I wish you all the best.
Well, thanks, Matt. So glad that we're able to do this and catch up. I think so highly of the stuff that you do, and you're such a bright mind in this space, and I hope everybody enjoys listening to this. So thank you, and I hope we get to talk soon.
Thank you very much, Jeremy. It's my pleasure.
If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, please share it with your friends and on your social media channels, and I'll continue to develop great content interviewing more folks just like yourself.